cryptocurrency is a legitimate form of currency and transaction. But criminals, no matter what type of payment system it is, whether it's ACH, wire, whether it's a debit card, credit card, they're going to attack a payment method or use a payment method to commit fraud.
Introducing The Protectors, inside criminal minds from around the world. Presented by the IAFCI, leaders in safeguarding consumers from fraud and scams for more than 50 years. And now your hosts, International President Mark Solomon and Chairman of the Board Michael Carroll.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Carroll, International Chairman of the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators. I am with Mark Solomon, our International President. Mark, how are you doing today?
Mike, I'm doing awesome. You know why? Because we're in May already. All right.
Nice.
Weather's warming up. My boat's going to be out in the lake shortly. So can't wait to enjoy this nice weather here in May. So we're doing doing great, Mike. Hey, Mike, I wanted to bring attention to our listeners. We had an extraordinary event back in April with CBS News. They did a whole week-long series on romance scams. And it's called Anything for Love. And Mike, I know you watched it. I watched it and millions of people. What was your thoughts about it?
You know, Mark, I learned a lot just watching the series that they put out. I mean, it was awesome. You know, I think the IFCI and the Protectors podcast played a part in getting this out, right?
Absolutely. You know, we had Kelly Gao on, and that the whole week-long series really focused on Kelly Gao and her mom, who was a victim of a romance scam and was found dead several days later. That was episode 40 and 41. And, you know, after that podcast, we all got together, Doug Taylor, yourself, and I, and we reached out to CBS, and they bought into this and saw the importance of educating people nationally. So, you know, we're glad that we played a part in that. And then, Mike, I believe Kelly is just about to be starting her own foundation for education and awareness for romance scams. And I heard you might know the name of it.
I think it's 4041, right?
Yep, the 4041 Foundation, and those were the episodes that Kelly came on with us and shared this very important story. And I know we got a ton of feedback nationally. CBS News did as well. I know my emails were, you know, flooded in social media, and hopefully it has prevented some people from getting victimized or those that are already in the process of being defrauded. Hopefully they're going to come forward and report it to law enforcement and stop the activity.
You know, Mark, somebody else that they interviewed, CBS, was Natalie Rita.
Yes.
Retired postal inspector. She's been on the podcast before.
Yep.
She's an expert on romance scams. She's now retired, but she was interviewed. She was outstanding. And, you know, it was just a great week series that they put on. I learned a lot just about romance scams. And, you know, for have Kelly to come on, that was great.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know what, Mike? If you're interested in supporting this great organization with Kelly, the web address is 4041foundation.org. So you can reach out to Kelly and show your support for what she's doing. And then for anybody that missed the show, it's on Paramount Plus streaming. So you could watch it anytime. And there's a great documentary that summarizes the investigation and how significant the problem is with romance scams globally. So,
all right, Mark, I think this is a good time to recognize our sponsor, lifevibe.us.
Absolutely. Today's episode of The Protectors is brought to you by LifeVibe.us, a champion of the Made in America movement. LifeVibe.us stands out as a beacon of hope in today's fast-paced world, dedicated to protecting your family from harmful chemicals and ensuring wellness on a budget.
Absolutely, Mark. With over 30 years of excellence, LifeVibe.us prides itself on being 100% debt-free, privately held e-commerce powerhouse, offering products made right here in the USA. They're not just about selling products. They're about creating a safer environment for you and your family with ingredients you can trust.
So why not start making a positive impact on your health and wallet today? Visit LifeVibe.us. And Mike, you know what else is great? We've been talking about CBS. We've been talking about our sponsor, but this person is also great, and he is a frequent guest of the podcast. He is a seasoned compliance professional with deep expertise in anti-money laundering, counter-terrorist financing, and global sanctions, focusing on the digital asset space. After a decade in the public sector with the U.S. Department of Justice and Treasury, he spent the last 5 years in the private sector transitioning his skills to digital assets, currently serving as the Chief Compliance Officer at PowerCoin LLC, also known as Margaux Network. Please welcome to the show our friend, Mike Fasanello.
Hi, how are you doing? Great to be back.
Mike, is this your fourth time on the Protectors podcast?
I can't even count anymore, but I love it every time.
Well, I think we're going to get you a pillow. I think after four times, you get a pillow. And then after 10, we have like our autographed steak knives. So but in all seriousness, Mike, we love having you on the show. So, Mike, you are such an expert in so many fields. And, you know, we're trying to also take a look at this romance scam and, you know, some of the trends that we're seeing it. And there seems to be a very big trend with cryptocurrency and romance scams. I don't know if you could maybe explain that a little bit to us.
Yeah, the proliferation of romance scams, elder fraud, ransomware, all kinds of different typologies of financial crime has exploded in the last few years with the advent of cryptocurrency and the blockchain. I know you guys have focused on pig butchering in the past. You focus on ransomware, elder fraud, all those different things, but something that they have in common most recently is that the way the threat actors seek to be paid is through cryptocurrency. And the reason for that is blockchain transactions, as we know, are permanent. They can't be called back. So once the money is gone, it's gone. And unless you have a compliant choke point like a crypto exchange that follows the law, it's very, very difficult to perform like a freeze and seize and actually get the person their money back. So it's extraordinary, really, what's been going on the last few years.
Hey, Mike, after we saw the CBS National program on Anything for Love on romance scams, we were thinking of you. We had the conversation with Doug and Mark, and we thought, you know, romance scams still being very popular. The method of payment, you know, a little while back was cash, which it still is. What do you call it? Gift cards. Yeah, you see that. But now it's more towards, I would say, more towards crypto. And that's why I wanted to bring you on. Is there any specific fraud or scams other than maybe romance scams, or is that the top one where you see crypto being used as form of payment from the victims to the fraudsters?
Yeah, so my past work with a variety of cryptocurrency compliance and investigations firms, the big thing was being hacked. It was ransomware, shutting down, you know, public sector services and things like that, and ransoming these big companies or government services, for millions of dollars in cryptocurrency. Then the typology shifted over to the John and Jane Doe on the street when threat actors found out that they could basically milk, you know, retirees, the elderly, people with even young folks with not a good handle on technology, anybody who has a lot of money to lose, essentially. They shifted over from the complexities of ransomware and, you know, all that technology, you know, leveraging hacking and coding and things like that, to just simple old school romance scams, elder fraud, and things like that. You know, they'll develop rapport with somebody, and sometimes it's a false relationship. Sometimes it's just an investment fraud, you know, trying to scam them, saying, hey, we can make you X amount of percent of return on your investment. But the central typology is they want the payment done in cryptocurrency, and they leverage crypto wallets that are not isolated to the user, which is the biggest piece of security that you can have, is to keep your crypto wallet only to yourself. So,
yeah. And Mike, I want to tell our audience that, you know, cryptocurrency is a legitimate form of currency and transaction. So it's not all bad, but criminals, no matter what type of payment system it is, whether it's ACH, wire, whether it's a debit card, credit card, you know, they're going to attack a payment method or use a payment method to commit fraud. So I want to let our audience know that cryptocurrency is a legitimate currency. But right now we're seeing that trend of the fraudsters prefer using cryptocurrency transactions. And I think you alluded to it before, but could you explain why you believe that these criminals are using this particular form to send that money or launder money?
Yeah, so first of all, it's really important that the point that you made about it being a legitimate form of payment. And although, you know, government in the United States is not necessarily recognizing it as, you know, true money yet, and they're doing a hell of a lot as far as, you know, clamping down on regulatory controls and compliance controls. A lot of people think that crypto is not a regulated industry. It's a heavily regulated industry, both by the federal government and the states. For example, PowerCoin, Margaux Network, we are a FinCEN registered money services business. We have money transmitter licenses with a variety of states. It's very heavily regulated, and the patchwork quilt of regulation also is challenging, you know, for somebody like myself in the chief compliance officer role. I've got to jump from one foot to the next, dealing with all the different states and, of course, the overarching federal government. But to your second point there about how they're leveraging cryptocurrency, they're using it because it provides a level of anonymity. There's no PII, personally identifiable information, attached to crypto wallet addresses inherently. So, you know, if they give their victim an address and say, here, send me cryptocurrency here, there's nothing attached to that that says, you know, X person controls this wallet. Sometimes you can catch them at a compliant choke point, like if they use a crypto exchange like Coinbase or Kraken or one of those, which work very heavily with law enforcement and chief compliance officers like myself. We can attach certain PII to it, but it's never guaranteed. You're never guaranteed to get the exact person who's performing the scam. So that's one challenge. And then the other challenge is it's also irreversible transactions. This is not like credit cards where you can do a chargeback and, you know, put a freeze on the funds or things like that. This is, you know, once you hit that send button, that cryptocurrency is gone. And if it gets to the point where the scammers are good at laundering money, if they start to use mixers and tumblers, if they do swaps to different types of crypto, you can get really, really difficult time trying to recover those funds for the victim. So,
okay, mixers, tumblers. I thought you're talking about a bar scene or something. Mike, with my work, I get a lot of training on crypto, which I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Well, let me ask you this. And I mentioned her before, retired postal inspector Natalie Rita. Before she retired, she had a romance scam case where the victim was taking cash and going to an ATM Bitcoin machine and inserting the cash into a wallet. I mean, she was doing it so many times that the store set up a chair for her because she was there so many times putting cash into the ATM. Mm. But Mike, can you explain, how does that work? So you're inserting cash, it's going into a wallet. Who controls that wallet? How do you set up that wallet? And if you're with law enforcement, how do you find out who owns that wallet to try and retrieve those funds or at least stop it? How does that process work?
Yeah, the crypto ATMs are very much like traditional ATMs, except in the reverse. So whereas you go to a normal ATM, you know, you put in your banking card, you know, it attaches to your banking account, you want a certain amount of funds, and it transacts that with your bank and sends those funds back to you in cash right there on the spot. You just take them right out of the machine. In crypto ATMs, it's the reverse. People come to the machine wanting to purchase the asset. They want to purchase cryptocurrency. So they'll come, instead of inserting their debit card, credit card, they'll insert cash. And actually, some of our machines even do take credit cards or debit cards. But they'll insert their cash in the majority of these machines. And then they go through a bunch of KYC, depending on what level of transaction they want to do, whether it's $1,000 or $25,000 or whatnot. And we see people come with stacks of cash to these machines, which is always a red flag in and of itself when you're putting in thousands and thousands of dollars at one time into a crypto ATM. But they insert the cash. They provide some KYC, know your customer information to us. We clear them on the spot, trying to do our best we can to make sure that no nefarious activity is going on. Then they will be prompted to put in a crypto address, a hash of a crypto address. And when they put that hash in there, they are self-certifying or attesting to the fact that they own that address. They are the only ones who secure and can use that address. But what we're seeing with the scams is a lot of the time the scammer has provided that crypto wallet to the victim and to our customer. And therefore, they're not the only ones that actually control that. So,
yeah, Mike, I was going to ask you that. Is it the fraudster that provides the victim the wallet number or whatever that ID would be to where the funds would go?
Yes, correct. Yeah, the scammer provides the crypto hash address, the wallet address to the customer. Customer puts that into the machine, enters it on the keypad, and then we send the funds to where they direct it. You know, they direct it to a certain area. They tell us it's theirs and theirs alone. You know, we have to trust the customer on that.
Yeah, it's just hard to understand, like, how somebody can get involved in a romance scam and send the money through ATM Bitcoin when they probably don't even understand where it's going. You know what I mean? How they convince that person to do this when they probably have little knowledge about crypto.
I would almost, you know, for somebody in law enforcement, as long as you and Mark have been, it probably isn't surprising, to be honest with you. But the types of scams and the way these con artists can latch their hooks into people is absolutely unbelievable. Sometimes we have people coming to the ATMs, to our kiosks, because they're receiving phone calls from fraudulent federal investigators, from IRS, in fact, that will say, hey, you know, we looked over your tax returns. There's a problem with your tax returns. We need you to remit a certain amount to us to solve the problem. And they send them to a crypto kiosk and they get scammed that way. Sometimes we have people coming in and they were contacted overseas by somebody who's been talking to them online for 6 months, 8 months. Person says either they're ailing or they need help getting back to the United States or something like that. So that's the romance scam or the pig butchering, where the scammers have developed a rapport and a relationship with the individual, sends them to the kiosk. Other times we get ransomware victims where their computer is locked up. They're told to call a certain number on the computer to unlock the computer. They get a scammer on the phone who says, all right, now that you're unlocked, we notice that your banking accounts that you use this computer for are at risk. You're going to need to talk to a specialist at, you know, X bank. They'll put them on the line with a second scammer. That scammer will then convince them that in order to save the funds in their retirement account, their checking account, savings account, whatnot, they have to go and take the money out of a branch and go bring it to the crypto kiosk and insert that. I mean, it's astonishing the complexity and the layers of the onion as far as how these victims are getting scammed.
Yeah, Mike, you know, everywhere I go now, it seems like I'm noticing, you know, Bitcoin ATM kiosks, they're gaining popularity, whether it's at a convenience store, at a gas station, at a mall. You know, you brought up a good point, though, is what happens if you're working at that store, convenience store, or mall, and you see the same person, just like Mike described in his case. I mean, they got the woman a chair to sit down because she was there pretty much all day putting money into the ATM. So what some advice that we could give the store managers, or I know in the banking world, you know, if somebody pulls out a large amount of cash and they're an older American, they usually are given a pamphlet, said, hey, just want to make sure this is not a scam, or they're actually verbally have a conversation with them. What can these store owners or managers do?
So I'll hit that point and then I'll hit why sometimes even that isn't enough, sadly. So the store owners, and we have some store owners that are very cognizant of their, not only their store and what's going on in it, but also the customers. You know, they get routine customers that come there for other things, not just our kiosk. But when they have a regular customer who they've developed a relationship with, a professional relationship with, and they know, you know, what that person's background is, maybe they're a retiree and things like that, they see them using the kiosk over and over again. Sometimes we do get the calls to our relationship management or customer service, and, you know, store owner says, hey, I got one of my normal customers using your kiosk, but it sounds a little fishy about, you know, what she told me she's using it for and things like that. And so we'll look into that in compliance. You know, we serve not only a regulatory compliance function, but we also serve an investigatory capacity and also work with law enforcement very heavily. So it's both compliance and investigations. But aside from, you know, store owners, sometimes we'll have a tech working on a kiosk when somebody comes up and wants to use it, and they'll help the individual, you know, either set up their account or continue to use their account. And in that interaction, the person will describe, you know, what they're doing, why they're doing it. And our tech will actually call us and be like, this doesn't sound right. Can you guys talk with them, or can you look into the account activity and see if it, you know, seems like there might be any nefarious hallmarks? So, and, you know, when I spoke to the fact that sometimes even that's not enough, you know, sadly, a lot of times, especially with the ransomware typology we've been seeing, when they get those scammers on the phone, those people have been telling the victim, do not explain to anybody what you're doing or why you're doing it. They will help them answer the KYC questions on our kiosk. I mean, they've really got their hooks into the point where these people, the only person that they think they can trust is the person on the phone with them. It's terrible. And it's exceedingly difficult for compliance and investigators to break that cycle.
Yeah, Mike, we've done that with the IFC. I had to go along with what Mark was saying, you know, with the gift cards. You know, in retail stores, there's a sign there when you go to buy the gift cards, you know, don't read off the numbers on the back. When you get up to the counter, there's a sign. when you go outside, there's an airplane going by. Don't read off the numbers with the little advertisement. Don't. People still do it. They don't. They're focused, you know, and they're telling them, you know, the fraudsters telling them a different thing, and they're focused and they're not paying attention. We did a stop action video for store clerks, you know, what to say when somebody comes up to the counter, you know, questions to ask. But there's still people out there, unfortunately, that they got blinders on and they don't see the whole picture, and they get caught up in this.
I was going to say, I noticed that, you know, the main thing that I think kind of pulls the veil over these people's eyes or puts the blinders on them is they have that emotional response. Well, typology is there's always a sense of urgency, a sense of huge possibility of loss. So these people's, their emotions are already so heightened that they're very easily able to kind of cast aside what would normally be their judgment process. And they're entirely putting themselves in the hands of the scammer.
And Mike, you know, so many times we see this, like you said, that the victim is under the ether. You know, it's a coin that AARP Fraud Watch uses, and it's very hard to rationalize with them that, hey, what you may be doing is you're involved in a fraud, you're being victimized. But what can family members look for specifically if they're dealing with cryptocurrency transactions? Maybe it's a loved one and a mother or father or grandparent. What are some of the things that the family members could look for in the houses, especially if they're writing account numbers down or crypto wallets down? What are some of the things that might tip off that this person is sending large money via cryptocurrency?
There are some visible hallmarks, and you know, some of those things might be maybe seed phrases that are written down on a notepad or on a computer. Seed phrases are they're a hash, an alphanumeric hash address of 12 or 24 characters. You know, they're usually associated with private keys, which is like a 12 or 24 phrase words that could make up a phrase, but they don't really make up a cognizable phrase. It just looks like a bunch of different words that don't mean anything. So 12 or 24 words that seemingly mean absolutely nothing. That would be like a crypto private key to a hash address. So things like that written down. You could also have what look like tiny flash drives, but they're really not an actual computer flash drive. They almost look like a key fob. So those are like hardware wallets. But the biggest thing is being able to have that open discussion and speak with your loved ones about what's going on in their life, what's going on in their financial life. And not to be done like a prying way, but like just looking out for things where they might say something a little bit odd, or, you know, I met this person online, I'm helping them out, I feel really good about what I'm doing, and, you know, I'm throwing them a couple grand here and there when they need it. That's like a red flag. You know, you're really going to see less of the physical red flags than you are the non-visible red flags. So it's important for family just to keep their ears and eyes open as far as that goes.
Yeah, you know, and I was just thinking too, is that, you know, so many times family members don't know what to do, you know, or a loved one, they know that person's being victimized. You know, you could reach out to your local police department, you know, your federal agencies, your friends, your family members. AARP Fraud Watch Network has a 24-hour hotline. The more and more that people speak to that person, hopefully they're going to realize what's going on and stop sending any more money.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, like you said, they make it look like an emergency, right? Because they don't want you to talk to anybody. You know, they don't want you to think about it. You know, they want you to move right away. And they always use, you got to act now or you won't get the money for your family or your kids or whatever. But yeah, it's always an emergency. It's a big part of every scam. Hey, Mike, can I bring up another scam? Pig butchering. We had back on, I think it was episode 46, we had Erin West. She was with the Santa Clara County District Attorney's Office. She's an expert on pig butchering. But, you know, maybe for some of our new listeners, what exactly is pig butchering and how does crypto come into play with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Erin's great. She's our what we call our West Coast superstar. She's made a huge name for herself in assisting victims of pig butchering, trying to recover their funds. A pig butchering scam is basically a type of confidence scheme or investment fraud where the victim is gradually lured into being fattened up, making increasing contributions to an investment scheme or to somebody's, you know, romance scam. And as they're fattened up over time and as their relationship and the rapport is built up over time, the level of investment, the volume of money increases. And then when it gets to a tipping point where the scammer is you know, is satisfied or fulfilled, then they'll absolutely ghost the person. They'll shut down all means of communication. That's what we call the slaughter. And this all comes from largely the Asian countries. Asian organized crime is huge in this. And they've been the biggest threat actors in this space. And Erica can attest to that. And she's been down there in Thailand and Hong Kong and a whole bunch of other places to speak on this and kind of raise the level of threat to the local and federal governments in those countries on this. Mm.
Mike, also too, and a side note is, are there any vulnerabilities of using, let's say, a crypto ATM? Can it be hacked? I know quishing has become an issue possibly at crypto ATMs. What are some other concerns outside of the fraud that we're focusing on here today that could be an issue with crypto ATMs?
Yeah, the biggest thing with the ATMs is really the technology itself is not so much a victim of hacking or things like that as sending these unwitting victims to go use the technology. You know, I would say that maybe things you might see is like actual traditional phishing with email or business email compromise schemes and things like that, where they can leverage that sort of a scam to get somebody to a crypto ATM. But we're not seeing a lot of people like going in there and, you know, trying to hack the machine. I mean, if anything, the machine carries more cash than it does, you know, the ability of cryptocurrency liquidity. So, you know, people, I mean, not that I encourage this, but people would be more akin to, you know, go throwing a chain around the machine and trying to drag it out of a store than actually trying to steal crypto from the machine. But yeah, it's an interesting thing that we've been seeing, the leveraging of these, you know, traditional types of schemes in conjunction with cryptocurrency and these physical ATMs.
Hey, Mike, I went online earlier. A Bitcoin value is $62,000. Is that correct?
Should be right about now, yeah. And it's been up and down. We came out of a crypto winter where it went into the low teens, and then it shot back up to reach an all new high in the early 70s. And then it took a little bit of a pullback, so we're just waiting for the next shot up.
If I want to invest, would they take postage stamps, you think?
I'm just kidding. Jesus. Here we go again.
I went for the post office. I thought I got a couple extra stamps. Elvis stamp. That's what it is.
Liquidate your stamp collection to cash, and you can come to one of our kiosks. And I guess.
Well, Mike, if I wanted to invest, what do you recommend about that? You know, finding somebody that's reliable, obviously, when you want to invest. But any tips on that?
Yeah. So the biggest investment recommendation in the world of crypto is, and it's a sort of a phrase, it's a catchphrase, not your keys, not your coins. So that means when you don't hold the keys to your own crypto address, whether it's an online hot wallet, which just means it's connected to the internet. Whether it's a cold wallet, like I was talking about, the hardware drives that look like little key fobs or flash drives. If you don't hold that 12 or 24 word seed phrase and you're the only person that has that, then you're not doing it in a secure way. Some companies, some of the crypto exchanges will set you up, you know, with your own address, but they'll provide a certain amount of custody in a secure fashion. So you can trust them with that. But generally, I recommend people buy their cryptocurrency on an exchange or on one of those compliant services and then transferring it to their own crypto wallet, because that's the securest way to hold this stuff. It can be a little tedious at first to like learn how to do that. But once you've done it a few times, it gets to be very just easy to do. And I mean, if anything, it sort of like harkens back to the Stone Age. I mean, when you get one of these crypto wallets and these hardware wallets, a lot of people find that the securest way to store their seed phrase is not writing it down on paper, because what's that, water soluble, it's, you know, it's flammable. They'll actually engrave their seed phrase into metal. So you're getting these metal tablets and engraving these seed phrases in there and using them in conjunction with these hardware wallets. And it's almost comical, because you're using such a modern, you know, way of transmitting value, but also a very ancient way of securing it. So it's always amusing to me.
So, Mike, you know, being in law enforcement previously and, you know, a mid-sized police department, a lot of police agencies maybe don't have the resources or the education or the software to investigate this. Do you have any recommendations for those smaller police agencies that may be dealing with the cryptocurrency fraud?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're spot on. The feds are very on top of this stuff. They've obviously got the budget and everything to be able to pursue these things and learn the most out of them and acquire all the different vendors, the software solution vendors, and the investigative software solutions, but the local and states are a little bit behind the ball on that. And especially at the local level, they often are either, there's kind of two typologies. They're either caught unable to help the victim at all, and they just don't know enough about it. And they say, oh, cryptocurrency, it's gone. Your money's gone. We're so sorry, can't help you. And that's really a tragedy, because there are ways that you can help at that level. But then the other side of the coin is law enforcement at the local level that thinks they know what they're doing, and they think that they're doing the right thing, but it's in this technology, it's not the right way to go about it. For example, I'm not going to name the state or the agency, but I recently had, so like 9 out of 10 times, if a local law enforcement officer comes to our kiosk with a search and seizure warrant, they're looking to get the money out of the kiosk. They're looking to take the kiosk into custody physically. And I'm able to talk them down, because that's not the asset that you're looking for. The customer came and they did a legitimate transaction with a legitimate business on the basis of fraud, of course. But the asset that they're looking to, should be looking to seize, is not the machine or the cash they're in. It's the cryptocurrency, because the person took that cryptocurrency from us. They gave us cash. We gave them cryptocurrency in that denomination, the dollar value. And then they sent that to somebody else. So that's the asset that you should be chasing. You know, the 1 out of 10 times, and I just had this happen very recently. I was actually on vacation. I had to deal with this for a week. We had some Northeast detectives that wanted to basically break into the crypto kiosk and take all of the cash that was in there to the amount that the victim was scammed, and then give that back to the victim. And I said, whoa, hold on a second. If you take the cash from the kiosk, first of all, you're taking cash that we gave somebody an equivalent amount of cryptocurrency. And so if you give the money back to them, they've got the value of the crypto to that amount, and then they've got the cash, so they're duly enriched. It's like, we don't want to be, you know, unjustly enriching somebody. And then the other piece of it is, they should be tracing down the crypto on the blockchain, which that you have to do very quickly in order to be effective, instead of spending your time with a search and a seizure warrant, getting subpoenas and all this other stuff to try to get the cash attached. So, you know, it was difficult to try to negotiate with them. We ended up getting into a situation where I've now got an escrow agreement with a local law firm and things like that. And now we have to go through the courts instead of argue our case. So
right.
I would say that resource-wise, these local and state law enforcement officers, when they don't know what to do, should be reaching out to cryptocurrency investigative solution vendors. And I'll name a whole bunch so that there's resources for them. Chainalysis is a huge one. TRM Labs is another one. My former employer, Anchain.ai, and Blockchain Intelligence Group, they're big ones. Those are like the major four, like the big four in crypto investigations. And then also chief compliance officers in your locality, like myself, you know, like somebody in Pennsylvania, you know, if they have a problem, they can always call up Margo Network and say, hey, can we talk with your chief compliance officer? Got a couple of questions about how to go about, you know, doing a subpoena, search and seizure warrant, things like that on cryptocurrency. I'm always there for you guys.
Awesome.
Hey, Mike, you're giving a lot of great information that local law enforcement is always asking, like Mark said. I mean, maybe we could get, you know, those four that you provided, and where local law enforcement can go when they got a case regarding cash put in a Bitcoin ATM, what they need to do, who they could reach out to. That would be great. Maybe we could put that in the show notes or something, absolutely, if you don't mind, or get it out to our listeners, especially on the law enforcement side. I think that'd be very helpful.
Yeah. And Mike, one last question. I appreciate you staying on with us for so long here is, if somebody's interested in investing in cryptocurrency, is there any resources out there, and then, you know, places where they could go? I believe your company actually has a blog, right? Where they could, you know, explain what crypto is and some of the fraud stuff too.
Absolutely. We have a blog set up. We also have, if you go to www.margonetwork.com, that's margonetwork.com/help. It's going to take you right to our help center. And we've got a big banner there. How can we help you? We've got a tab on how to use the Marco ATM networks kiosk, how to have an intro to cryptocurrency. We have scam and fraud prevention, most popular questions, FAQs, huge resource for customers.
Hey, Mike, just one more question from me. What you were talking about, you know, all the different types of scams. There was an alert that came out. I'm in Chicago. It came out from locals on the victim of, you mentioned it, tech scam. Lost $60,000 in gold bars. This person went out and bought gold bars, and the fraudsters came to the house and picked them up. So I'm just saying, these scams are out there.
Old school and new school.
Yeah. But the method of losing money, I guess, is not only crypto, but now gold bars. You got the gift cards. You got wire transfers. You got strictly cash. But the scams are still still the same variation, but the money that they're losing is being sent out very different ways.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to go take those gold bars and they may be engraved with serial numbers. They're going to melt those suckers right down and you know, make jewelry out of them, or coins or whatnot. It's crazy.
Right, right. Well, Mike, thank you again for being on the show. And before we leave, we want to thank our sponsor as well. So as we wrap up today's episode, we want to give a huge thanks to Life5.us for not only sponsoring the Protectors, but also for their unwavering commitment to the American dream. This is a company with a 38-year track record of independence, integrity, and deep-seated belief in what America stands for. All right. Well, Mike, I appreciate you being on the show fourth time. Like I said, your pillow's on the way, steak knives if we get you on a couple more times. So, but
yeah, Mark, isn't that when you have like a bad phone, direct number right to him? He picks up all the time.
He always picks up. He's always there for us. I love it. I love it. Mike. And what I love, Mike, too, is you make it easy for us to understand. This is not a very easy topic.
Nope.
But what I love is you break it down so the average person could understand it. And thank you for what you're doing to educate the public to prevent some of these cryptocurrency crimes from occurring.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me back again. Love it.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, Mike, another great episode. This guy, we should just have him on every week, I'll tell you.
But how about it?
I want to thank our listeners for always tuning in. We love you, and we hope you're getting some great information. And Mike, where can they find us?
Well, Mark, you can go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Wherever you listen to podcasts, please subscribe to the IFSI Presents the Protectors. We'd love to have you on board.
Yeah, and Mike, you know what? We also want to hear from our listeners. So if you have a question, you want to hear about a particular fraud or scam, or maybe you've been a victim or you've investigated one of these cases successfully, we'd love to have you on the show. So you could just send us an email at IAFCIProtectorsPodcast@gmail.com.
And Mark, we talked at the beginning of the show about the CBS National News story on Anything for Love. If we could, we should put that on our show notes for our listeners, where they, if they have not seen it, they could see the whole weekly episodes. It's outstanding.
I have to give a shout out to Matt Moss from CBS News, who really worked a good 6 months on this story with their investigative team. And obviously Kelly Gow, we love her and what she's doing. And hopefully there'll be some more answers for her in her mother's case. And again, she's got that 4041foundation.org. And then you can watch all the episodes and series on Anything for Love on Paramount Plus. All right, Mike. Well, listen, it's about time I think we sign off once more. So I'm going to head out now. I'm Mark Solomon. I'm the IFCI president from Connecticut, signing off.
And this is Mike Carroll, international chairman from Chicago. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Remember, as you join the fight to protect our citizens, you're not alone. With more than 6,500 members from around the world, the men and women of the IAFCI are standing together with you. To learn more or to join the IAFCI, please visit our website at www.iafci.org. The Protectors Podcast is produced by Modified Media and is available for free wherever you listen to podcasts. The hosts and guests' opinions are their own and do not reflect those of management, employers, or sponsors. Listeners are encouraged to contact law enforcement if they suspect being a victim of a crime.